that they're doing by their work. And I wonder what Bible's work is. I mean, as opposed to just the ordinary things you do. Like there's sometimes it says there's a Bible project. This is a Bible project. Certain people are doing Bible's work. But one part of me is to think, how could it be restricted? You know, or how it is...
I understand your point. What I say is that what is not Bible's work? Tell me. Everything, just sitting over here, spreading your feet right out there, her sitting there, you are doing Baba's work, you are doing Baba's work, my answering your queries is doing Baba's work. This cushion being over here, you see, either, is also doing Baba's work. We are all over here, seated quietly, listening. They are also doing Baba's work and we are doing... What is it that is not doing Baba's work? In general, everything in creation is according to his own original whim, in working out its own way so precisely, so meticulously, that because the creation does his work, he has infinite leisure. That's what he said. I am having infinite leisure. Why? Because the whole creation runs, you see, so meticulously, in great precision, from the time of my whim, that I have nothing to do, no work. That's one point. Another point is, for Baba lovers who love Baba, they should do Baba's work. What is Baba's work now? That way. That is God's work when he says that he has infinite leisure and all that. Baba's work is, the first and foremost is, that he wants you to remember him. That's most important. There's no other greater work than for him that would please him, that would help him, that would make him feel happy, if you call, as a man, is to remember him. Because even on an ordinary human level, you see, no man is more happy, made more happy, than having the knowledge that somebody remembers him. So he wants us to remember him as much as possible, under all circumstances. Now remember him, if you are loving him, remembering him through love. If you despise him, if you don't like him, if there are certain reservations, then remember him through hate, but remember him, he says. Then you start remembering him through love, suppose, or through hate. And what you will do is start working in favor of him or in against him. When a person remembers a person adversely, then what does he do? He starts working in such a way that it creates complications for the man. When he starts working, you see, in favor of the person, then he starts working in such a way that it helps him. So whatever it be, you just do. What is there that you'll do to help him? How will you start working now your way after remembering him adversely or favorably? What you have to do is to, if you are, say, helping him by remembering him favorably with love, what do? You tell others about him. You glorify him. In your remembrance, you try to glorify him. In your speech, you try to glorify him. In your acts, you try to glorify him. In your thought, actions, everything, you glorify him. How would you? You'll ask how to glorify him. Every little act, you have to glorify him. Make him constant companion. Any act that you do, do it in such a way that you'll be doing it as if he is present by your side. That's how you do him. Do his work. Now there is a big project, you see. Somebody thinks of creating a film on Meher Baba, eh? That's a big project. Now you get a fancy, you see, to lend your hand, you see, in that big project. Now, you get a whim to do that. You have taken a fancy to doing Baba work in that. Now when you start going in, you see, then naturally they will feel happy about it, that there is a certain person who wants to lend his hands are there, and they are very happy about it. But if you are doing that work for Baba, then what you have to do is you have to do it for him, and not for your sake or for that project or anything of the sort. That so that through that project he will be all the more glorified. That's how, up to you how you do it. Then there are other persons who would want to do Baba's work, but then they can't meet the both ends there where they are, so naturally they would want some remuneration. They can put in labor, provided there is somebody who can help them financially. But you don't do it because you are helped financially, but because you feel that through your labor you will be able to all the more glorify him. You follow? So the net result should be that through whatever means you put yourself through, you glorify him through your labor, through your thoughts, through your words, actions, acts, whatever it be. There's no such hard and fast rule, you see, as to how one should do his work. The most important thing, the only thing that you can do to his work is to remember him and forget yourself. It all boils down to that. He has told us that. You remember him to such a degree that you forget yourself, and that will be the greatest service that you will render to him.
There's always been one question that has bothered me since I was a child, and it was so part and parcel of my Christian background that I could never resolve it. And it's a question that in reading Baba's literature still sort of remains unanswered for me. And that is sort of the guilt that gets associated with being separate from God. Even if it's an illusory separateness, there is that feeling that yes, God is hidden in me somewhere, but I identify with not being that part. The problem with the guilt is that if our individual souls were separated out of God's whim, then we really, as individuals, bear no responsibility for that seeming separateness. And all that we go through in creation and all the experiences that we have in trying, in evolving back, those experiences and those impressions, whether they were good ones or bad ones, also weren't out of our will. You know, we didn't willfully separate ourselves, we didn't willfully. And I think at some point I feel the desperation of that. I feel the desperation of, really, what am I doing here? I mean, I didn't choose to be separated. I didn't choose to build up all these sense gears. I didn't willfully, pick from the good fruits or the bad fruits or all of that. And I think that's a conflict that I still sometimes go through. It's a philosophic question which I have a lot of trouble coming to grips with.
Simple solution for it is, don't take the blame or don't take the credit for what you're doing. You see, you haven't brought about your separate existence on your own. But why do you take the credit that whatever you are doing, you are still remaining separate, you are still not being united with him? Why do you take the blame upon yourself, you see? So what Baba says is that he has made you a puppet in his game for his pleasure. Act as a puppet. You see? Don't take the blame nor the credit upon you. And nothing will then create complications or confusion, you see. You act your part, play your part very well. Do exactly as he wants you to do. Whatever, under whatever situation he has put you, you do it. Whatever be your vocation, whatever be your... You want, this reminds me of a very good story now. At the time, if you all want to go for your lunch, please remind me. I can't see the clock. You can see the clock, too. You're hungry?
I want to hear a story.
So, the thing is that... at the time of Prophet Muhammad, there came to him a certain person. Now see this guilt complex, eh? See how it is. So, a certain person came to him. And, he was so impressed by the Lord. You see his discourse and everything, you know. And he says, my God, he is truly the Prophet of the Lord. Oh, he has brought the message of the Lord. So I must be very straight, and I must be very honest to myself, as he says, you see, and I must be very brotherly towards one another and all that. And poor fellow, he gave up his vocation. and he was now starving. He tried his best to put his hand to certain things and he failed everywhere. He couldn't do it. So he was starving. He got emaciated, absolutely, because he loved the Lord so much and his precepts. So he was following. So eventually, you see, he was so weak and frail, he came to the Lord and fell at his feet and says, "Lord, suggest something. What should I do? What should I do?" He says, "What do you mean, what should I do? What work should I do? Give me a hint." He says, "It's so simple. Continue the vocation of your father." And all the more he was so sad at heart, he didn't know, he got stunned to hear the Lord's reply. "Have the vocation of your father." That's what he was doing, and he had to leave it when he came to him. So all those who were close to him, they were watching the reaction on that man. They felt very peculiar about this man. They were intrigued as to why is it he comes for advice from the Lord, and when the Lord advises him, he is not happy about it. So the Lord himself comes to his rescue and says, "Well, man, aren't you happy with my advice? What was your father?" "He was a thief, sir." You see, and the Lord advises him to follow the vocation of his father. So he was a thief. So the Lord says, "So what? I want you to follow the vocation of your father." So he says, "All right, I will do so." "That's good," he says. "But remember, two things." "I'll remember." "So always do justice in your life. And whenever you hear the call for the prayer, leave everything and be in tune with the Lord. If you do these two things, nothing can bind you. Continue with the vocation of your father." The man leaves. Now he has got the stamp, you see. Nothing can bind him, because the Lord has himself enjoined upon him to continue with the vocation of his father. So, and he is an expert in that. He was doing that work. But he left because Muhammad wouldn't like it, because Muhammad says never to rob anybody or do anything of the sort. Well, now he is doing it. Formerly he was doing it, taking the blame and the credit on him. Now why? What is he doing it? He is continuing with the vocation. How? The Lord has enjoined upon him to do it. So he never takes the credit, nor takes the blame on him. You follow? And what is the net result, you know? You know the story? It's a Sufi story. Huh?
I'm not a Sufi.
You are not a Sufi. Well, but you are in that flock, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know the story?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. So then what happened is that now the Lord has said, so he goes out in search of a very good house. He has the backing of the Lord himself now. So he goes out and he selects a beautiful mansion. Very wealthy person there, in the locality there. And he goes in, throws his noose there, he climbs over onto the terrace through a rope, goes inside, and there he knows. He knows his tricks, you see. He knows his trade very well. So what he does, he goes to the hearth, the fireplace, the kitchen. Those were the days when they used to have their banks, not in the big buildings or anything, but just where the women would all flock together, where it could be protected all the time. Which was that place in the house? It was the hearth, where always there would be the presence of the women folk or the children or the men eating and all that, you see. So there they would dig and put their treasures inside. So he feels it's in the darkness of the house, and he knows. He could feel it. His hands were so sensitive to know this. So now, how does he dig now, Jacob? How? Yeah, there you are. So he goes on digging. And he lays his hand on a bag of leather there. Ah, he says that. And there goes heavy, full of gold. And he again goes on digging, and another one. 25 bags of gold he could gather in no time there. 2-3 hours, he collected all that. Ah, he says, beautiful. He thanks the Lord for telling him to do the vocation of his father. And he collects all that, bundles it into a big load there and slings it across his shoulder, and he puts his first 2-3 steps. But the Lord has told me to do justice. I am a bachelor. Here is a huge household. I am depriving them of all the treasure. That's not justice. The Lord told me to do justice. One bag out. He puts another step. No, but this is not justice. Two more bags, three more bags, four more bags, five bags. Out of the 25, he is carrying only five on his shoulder. And everywhere, he is now about to leave because it's time now. He must leave. So everywhere, like flops, you see, you have these things. You know, cow flops. Then, now he's about to get down of the mansion there to the same device, rope. Just then, right on the terrace, he hears the morning call, prayer, from a minaret of a nearby mosque. Oh, he says, this is the second injunction the Lord gives. He puts his load down and he stands in attention and starts praying, Allahu Akbar, and he shouts and he prays. So the owner of the house wakes up his wife, says, do you hear somebody here in our house, somebody praying? He says, yes, but we never pray, we are not used to praying at this hour. Who prays to the Lord who needs something from him? No? Wealth. No? When you are rich, when you are wealthy, when you are rolling in wealth, there is no need to draw his attention. Nobody was attending the prayers in his house at the time. So it intrigued him. So he woke up. He woke up. His wife was intrigued. So wife also woke up. His eldest son was there. The daughters were there. So they all now go up. And as soon as they stepped out, what they find? They just stumble. And what is that strikes them? It's their own treasure. A bag of gold. A few more steps. And they say, yeah, another one, another one, another one. What's this? We have been robbed here by somebody. But what is this? If we are robbed, then what are these bags for? They don't know. They are all the more intrigued. They reach up there where the voice is coming now. And they find a young man, all attention, absorbed in prayer. And they all stand, because that's the Muslim custom, they can't disturb anybody in prayer. Till the prayer is over, they stand there. So when the prayer is over, the man is relieved from his prayer. So the man of the house interrogates him and says, hey, who are you? He says, I'm so sorry, I am a thief. Thief? How can you be a thief? You don't proclaim that you are a thief like this with prayers and loud noises. And why did you throw all these? Who robbed you? Who was the one that robbed these? Why did you drop them down there? Then he tells the whole story, that he was a professional thief. He left thieving because he contacted the Lord. And then he was starving. And the Lord says to continue with the vocation of his father. So he is just doing it because the Lord has told him to do it. So he says, you can never be a thief. You are the slave of the Lord. And only the slave of the Lord is fit to have the hand of my daughter. And you will own the house now. You run the whole business. You are my son-in-law. And that's how, that was the end of his thief.
His
daughter was very beautiful. He got a beautiful daughter, he got all the treasure, and he obeyed the Lord. He did it because, not because of guilt or having any guilt complex or having anything to do with credit or with anything else, but because the Lord told him to do it. So likewise, if you continue with your life, knowing that it is his and it is dedicated to him, it's finished.
But if everybody is one with God, we were part of the original plan, so we are responsible for that we're going through.
It's his button that was itching. But ask God.
Yeah, but we were part of it.
Ask God.
But not individual.
Ask God, not individual, but we were part of it.
Yeah, but we didn't.
We are part of it. We were and are.
But it's our whim, too.
Yeah, but what are we? We are a part of him that is nothing. He is everything.
Yeah.
We are as a part as nothing. What is that nothing? Is the product of his imagination. At the first whim, you see, who am I? So at that time, simultaneously, infinite consciousness and infinite unconsciousness protruded, ejected, got out that which was latent, you see. And he began to experience himself.
through his infinite consciousness and through his infinite unconsciousness. Through his infinite consciousness, he had the experience, I am God, the infinite. Through his infinite unconsciousness, he got the first experience of the most rudimentary impression. Diametrically opposite to his being infinite, he experienced himself as most finite. And being infinite, his experiences continue, you see, even now, through different multifarious forms. What are you? Who am I? Here. You wanted this, so the wants continue, the search continues, who am I? Through his infinite unconsciousness, till in every individualized soul, it is attained with the experience, I am God, that's it. But that experience, he experiences, not you, because you are a product of his imagination. But why do you exist? Because it is the product of whose imagination? It is the product of the imagination or the imagining of existence infinite and eternal. When you imagine, you don't create anything concrete. When he imagines, the he being existence, that is imagined. What is God? God is infinite existence, as Baba says. So when God, the infinite existence, imagines, his imagining carries the stamp of existence. So whatever is imagined is there, becomes, it is created all the time, you see. So we are that product of the nothing, which is his imagination. So all what we have to do is to drop this. We enact our roles according to his imagining, according to the role that pleases him. If we come back to earth now from metaphysics, it's nothing but we are his puppets, in short. He is the overlord, he is the one besides whom there is none. And he being the overlord, having all the infinite attributes of love, compassion, all that, on whom should he exercise these? So he started playing, as he told us, a game of solitaire. And when you are lonely and all alone, and you are the overlord, having all the vast treasures of all the infinite love, all the infinite compassion, everything that needs to be shared that you have, there's nobody to share. So what do you do? You create somebody, you see, in your imagination, and as if you're pouring out your love on somebody. But unfortunately, who is imagining? The very existence is imagining. So that created things, you see, gave forms, concrete shapes were there. So that's how it all happened, that it came back on him, it recoiled on him. That's what Baba says. The creation, my own creation, has recoiled on me. And in each of all the forms, I find myself bound. That's my agony. And more than what you long to be released, I myself long to release myself from you, within you. That's what he says. So we are none. We are none. We are nothing. It's he who finds himself bound in you as Bob. That's his binding. What is Bob? That Robert is his bondage. Tim is his bondage. Erich is his bondage, you see? It's like that. So no sooner this falseness is dropped, he is what he really is. It's like that. So when we drop a falseness, that nothingness that we are just merges into nothing, which is known as realization of the individual. It's a headache. Don't ask such questions. It's a terrible thing. Yeah, there's no end to these things. Really speaking, there is nothing but God. As Baba once said, oh, you people who have lived with me for so many years, if the world will come to you and ask you, what is God? They'll say that you have been living with me, with him for so many years. He must have given you a good definition of what is God. So what will you answer? So then we started philosophizing God, you know, how we human beings are in our ignorance. And there were philosophers, there were scientists, there were us, bums, as we are. All each in his own started telling him what God meant for each one. So he was not satisfied with anybody's answer. So his own answer to us is, remember, he says, if the world were to come to you and ask you, what is God? The only answer to it that befits God is, what is not God, is the answer to it. You follow? That's how it is. Karen, anything there now in your mind about it? About what is not good?
I used to think that when I was really young. That either everything was totally right, or everything was totally wrong. And
so, and then I didn't want to believe everything was wrong. That's what caused me to have faith in God. But I started to see that. That's why Baba says, never scoff at anybody. Never think that anybody is wrong or anything is wrong or anything. Everything is in its right and proper place. Although it is not in each of us, is not the truth. But a part of the truth is there. You follow? So all these parts put together makes the whole truth. But at least we are part of the truth. Which in our ignorance we say that it is the truth. You will assert yourself as Jim. I will assert myself as Eras. I say what I say is right. I know what I am saying. That's ignorance in the part of the truth. That is conflicting all the time. Otherwise there is no conflict.
I wish you had another whim and withdraw it all.
It happens, yes. It happens. It does so often. It happens so often. So often means after eons. But for him it is nothing but an inhalation. Yes, sir. You know. So eternity is that terrible thing. Or that now, eternal now, you see.
The thing you brought out about like feeling guilt or taking the blame or taking credit for something. You know, I don't really know what I want to say, but maybe you would elaborate something about that, you know. You know how just like to feel that we've become a failure, you know, well, that's no different than feeling all blown up because, you know, you've done something, you've accomplished something.
What I mean, or what he has given us to understand is this, that whatever you accomplish, whether it be through your failure or through your success, you dedicate to him. That is not taking the blame upon yourself or credit upon yourself. Whatever is achieved, whether it be in your best of efforts you have failed, Baba, it's your wish, it's your pleasure. I have done my best. That doesn't mean that you should just remain static afterwards. Try to improve, try to be best. When you are faced with success, just say, Baba, it's your doing, it's your pleasure, it's what you have done. It's like that. And try to improve upon your success. Just as you would like to improve upon your failures, so also try to improve upon your success, knowing fully well that these successes and failures are nothing. They are nothing. They are all the time changing, the values change. You may be a successful person in your business, but that success is of no use. There is bound to be a better success, you see. This reminds me of another good story. Should I go and piddle and come, or you want to go out for lunch and then have another story? This reminds me of another thing. It means values change, you see, totally. When you are determined to be his, when you resolve to be his, when you determine to not to accept the credit or the failure on you, but it is his pleasure, it is his whim. I just am an instrument. You see? That's all. When you do that, values completely change for you.
This is so easy and so simple. Why is it so hard?
Because we make it hard. Because of our free will, we want to be separate from him. As Baba says, that although you have no free will of your own as such, yet you exercise your free will. Because when you exercise, what is the meaning of your exercising your free will? You want to assert yourself to be as you are. You want to assert your separateness from your true self, from your true identity.